Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, sitting next to Wes Hodkiewicz, and we're sporting the third jersey throwback look here in honor of what the Packers will be wearing on Sunday afternoon at Lambeau Field against the Baltimore Ravens. It is third jersey weekend, Wes, and final show of the week here. That brings us to keys to victory for Green Bay against Baltimore. And if we start on the offensive side of the ball, what do you got?
I have Brett Hundley. And the big thing there, obviously we've talked about him for the last month now. Certainly coming into his own a little bit. You and I have talked about that over and over again. A new wrinkle to this, though, is the fact that it's mid-November now. The temperature is dropping.
Yep.
And for Hundley, while he's been around Green Bay for 2 years now and has been through these practices with Aaron Rodgers and knows what it's like to get sort of acclimated to the weather, this is one of the first cold weather games he's really going to be playing. And you got to remember, I believe from Chandler, Arizona, ended up playing at UCLA. There's only a handful of times he's really played in like sub-below freezing type weather. He thought probably one game at Washington State was about 20 degrees or so at game time kickoff.
Okay.
Now, this particular game doesn't look like it's going to be like that. It looks like it's only going to be about 32, but getting used to these conditions and not just practicing but actually playing in it, I think that's going to be one of the big keys to this victory, because you look at Baltimore and Joe Flacco, what they deal with. For the most part, they're used to these kind of conditions. So seeing how that'll play out in this contest, I think is going to be one of the really intriguing things to watch.
Yeah, and I think what we'll have to see as far as what the weather has in store for Sunday, it's one thing for the temperature to be maybe in the low 30s.
Right.
It's another thing if those November winds kick up, because not only does that make it colder, but those breezes can have an impact on the football, and that's something that both quarterbacks would have to adjust to.
That was the other thing that Brett Hundley said as well, as we were talking with him a little bit after his media scrum on Wednesday. The only thing that really bothers him is wind. I mean, it can be as cold as you want. That's not really a big thing for them. It is when you get the wind conditions involved with that, you get sort of the suboptimal kind of conditions in that regard, where it can actually change, you know, maybe the direction of the ball or how it needs to be thrown.
Right.
That is also another thing I think you got to pay attention to in a contest like this. Fortunately for the Packers, this is a pretty veteran team around Hundley. They're used to this. Jamal Williams said he's used to running in colder weather too. I mean, it just comes with the territory. So it'll be interesting to watch, but definitely seeing how Hundley responds to that is going to be one of the new things I think we're going to kind of learn about him now in what will be his, what, third start, I believe?
Yeah. And in following up on your key to victory, mine for the offensive side, run the ball and protect the ball. Those,
right,
I think, are the two things that the Packers need to do. Running the ball, obviously, you'd love to have another 160-yard day on the ground like the Packers had against the Bears at Soldier Field. But here's another thing, Wes. What do the Jaguars, the Steelers, the Bears, and the Vikings all have in common? They have two things in common. They all put up big rushing numbers against the Baltimore,
correct,
Ravens. And they beat the Ravens in doing so. So this, you know, the Ravens are ranked sixth in the league in total defense, but they are third in the league as far as yards allowed against the pass. They are 28th in the league in the rushing yards allowed and 20th in the league in the yards per rush category. This game, the statistics, everything screams that the Packers have to be able to run the football to help Brett Hundley just like they did in Chicago.
Absolutely. Now, the one thing that's going to help Baltimore, Brandon Williams is back in this defense. So seeing exactly how that can kind of solidify that front, be interested to see how he is, you know, in terms of that regard. But as you said, there have been opportunities, and it's one thing to be able to break through a front. It's another thing to be able to extend the play into the second level. That's one thing I think if you talk to John Harbaugh, if you talk to the Ravens, they're looking to correct right now. They're trying to find a way to make that work better for them. From the Packers' perspective, we know that Aaron Jones isn't playing in this game. Mike McCarthy said on Friday, does not appear that Ty Montgomery will be playing,
right,
with the rib injury. Jamal Williams has wanted his shot at big plays and being able to extend things 10, 15, 20 yards downfield. I'm not saying that this is his opportunity, but you do have to think that this is where he can potentially start to develop that momentum and start looking for those big plays, because for him, that's the only thing I think that's really been missing so far.
Yeah, Jamal Williams is going to be the number one guy. I think we can expect Devontae Mays, the seventh-round pick out of Utah State, to potentially be the number two with where the Packers' backfield stands. And, you know, both of these guys, I mean, what Williams did in Chicago, and then you look at Mays being a 230-pounder like we talked about earlier this week, you like what they potentially bring to the table in a cold-weather game like this. Now, as far as protect the football, you look at this Ravens defense, Wes, they lead the NFL in interceptions with 13. They have,
yeah,
five different players with either two or three interceptions on the season. I believe they are second in the league in opponent passer rating. This is a defense that that will take the ball away if you give them those opportunities. And Brett Hundley's done a very good job protecting the ball. Had the interception in the fourth quarter against the Saints in his first start. Hasn't turned the ball over since then,
yep.
And that's something that needs to continue.
Absolutely. I look at this Baltimore defense, it reminds me in some ways of what the Giants did last year, which is they felt like they had certain areas that they were strong in, but they used free agency to address the areas that they weren't. Brandon Carr comes in, he has three interceptions. Jimmy Smith, I think, is having his best NFL season so far, has dealt with a lot of different injuries and setbacks, but has been healthy this season. I think it's made a difference for him. And then when you have Weddle on the back end as well, he's as, you know, veteran
yeah,
as they come back.
Yeah, he's an old pro. There's no question
so
about that.
So that mesh and being able to develop that chemistry, it's worked out really well for them. And yeah, Brett Hundley, to steal a Spoffism, has to be on his P's and Q's because they're going to be looking for the ball. It's not just him. It's every single quarterback they play every single week. They're looking to make plays.
Yeah, and we've got some keys to talk about on the defensive side of the ball. We'll get to those after the break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkowitz in that one. Wes, shifting gears to the defensive side of the ball, keys to victory here for the Packers on Sunday against the Ravens. What stands out to you?
A lot of things stand out to me, Mike, when you look at this matchup. And I mean, probably more than anything, it's going to be taking the ball away. And you look at Joe Flacco, what's happened so far this season, 10 interceptions. John Harbaugh said they're playing winning football when he takes care of the football. It's when they've had lapses, when they've had turnovers, that changes the complexity of a game. Credit to the Baltimore Ravens, though. They are tied for 10th in the league in turnover margin, despite the 10 interceptions.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, with them being able to take the ball away the way they have through the air. So, for me, I look at the cornerbacks in this matchup for the Packers. I look at Devon House. I look at Kevin King. King has been dealing with that shoulder injury. It sounds yep. like it's something he's just going to have to really gut through the rest of the season. And even you look at Dom Capers kind of mentioning a little bit on Thursday night, it's affecting the way he kind of redirects receivers at the line of scrimmage with their press man coverage. So that's something he's just going to have to fight through. And I think the Packers are very confident he's going to be able to do that and then figure out a process and a plan from there. But they need those guys to step up because even though the big play numbers haven't been there for the Ravens offense, Jeremy Maclin, Mike Wallace, there is a lot of playmakers there, and you can't let them get loose.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. My key to the game defensively here for the Packers is to not let the Ravens make big plays. I mean, I'm reading a lot of clips, hearing a lot of things coming out of Baltimore about with the Ravens coming off their bye week. You mentioned those receivers, Maclin and Wallace. They have Breshad Perriman as well. These are guys with some speed. These are guys with playmaking ability. There's a lot of talk in the Ravens camp, so to speak, about pushing the ball down the field, about taking more shots, because I think they're sensing that the talent and the skill that they have on offense isn't translating to what it should be, the production they should be getting. I think Joe Flacco, now granted, the weather may have something to do with it, but I think Joe Flacco may take some shots down the field
yeah.
on Sunday against this Packers secondary, and the defense can, you have to make the Ravens go the long way. You mentioned the mistakes that Flacco has made. If you make a team, you know, 10-12 play drive instead of letting them get big chunks of yardage, maybe you get a holding penalty when you get a good pass rush. Maybe the quarterback fumbles the ball. Flacco's fumbled it five times this year.
Right.
Hasn't lost any of those fumbles, but the ball has come out five
it's
times. He has the 10 interceptions. So you got to make the Ravens go the long way. You can't let them take the big chunks of yardage on Sunday.
Yeah, and the thing that stands out to me as I'm bringing up the stats right now, the one thing Packers, I think, have been very consistent with defensively is they have limited the big explosive plays, the plus 40 plays, the real true backbreakers that make it difficult to come back from and keep points off the board. And that's going to be something I think that holds true in this matchup. You look at the running game for the Ravens this season. Alex Collins is averaging 5.9 yards per carry. It's only been recently that he's really emerged as that main back during the game. You know, you look at Javorius Allen. He's kind of been the red zone guy. They'll use either one of them in the
yeah.
passing game. You need to be able to still curtail that. You need to be able to stop them. You want Flacco, as weird as it sounds for a guy that is a Super Bowl winning quarterback, you want him to be throwing the ball and you want to be able to execute off those opportunities. It's going to be a really interesting chess match to watch, Mike, because this offense and the way that they're structured, it's built to be a productive, really efficient offense. It just hasn't happened yet, and the Packers have to make sure in this particular week. It's delayed another week.
Yeah, when you look at the way NFL games unfold, you can even just go back to last week's game against Chicago to see the impact that big plays, that big chunks of yardage have. The Packers were the ones making those early in the game. You know, Randall Cobb on the early third down, Ty Montgomery, the 37-yard touchdown run. You had a big play with a pass interference over the top to Jordy Nelson. The Packers seemed to be very much in control of that game in the second half, and they were getting the better of the big plays. And then how did the Bears get back into it? A 46-yard touchdown right. pass. All of a sudden, it's a three-point game, and the Bears have all the momentum, and then you know, you're kind of trying to hang on. You've got to throw another counterpunch there to make sure you can hold on to that that victory. So big plays. Mike McCarthy talks about it all the time. The NFL is a big play league. The team that wins that big play equation more often than not ends up winning the ball game.
It's why the Ravens were Super Bowl champions 5 years ago, and Joe Flacco was, you know, paid and treated as one of the league's elite quarterbacks. His arm is as good as they come in the NFL. Now you look into some of the accuracy issues and maybe some of the turnovers over the last couple of years. They haven't been able to get back to where they want to be in terms of the playoffs and being a legitimate Super Bowl contender. But that potential is still there. I've said this since day one, and you heard me talking about this for the past number of weeks. This is one of the most dangerous teams, I think, for the Packers to be facing this year because yep. you don't know exactly what you're going to get and how they're going to be operating. So that side of it, I think if you're the Packers, if you're this defense, a lot of positives last week. Nick Perry with the 3 sacks. Clay Matthews doesn't have the sacks that you're looking at typically in the past, but I think he's been effective and been a playmaker, been an impactful player with their run game specifically. Kenny Clark's doing well on the line. There are a lot of positives you can point to for the Packers. But it's going to come down to consistency, and whichever team is more consistent specifically in that battle, Packers defense versus their offense, is going to be the team that walks out of there with a win.
Yeah, you mentioned Flacco winning that Super Bowl. What was the most memorable play of that playoff run? A 70-yard touchdown yep. pass on the road in Denver in the final minute of regulation to get that divisional playoff game with the Broncos to overtime. They won that and ended up winning the whole thing. You can throw a 70-yard touchdown pass in the final minute of a game, you're never out of it, right?
Nope, not at all. And that's why, again, when you look at quarterbacks in this league, Mike, how difficult it is to find those guys, that's the main reason the Ravens were making sure to keep Flacco, keep him in their playbook, keep him in their locker room. Now, the big thing for the Packers is, again, getting back to what you just said, if you minimize those opportunities, yeah. that's where you're going to have the opportunity on the Packers side of things to be able to control the football game.
Yeah, all right. Well, with that, we're going to throw it to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkiewicz over there. And Wes, a couple of special guests, certainly in the eyes of Mason Crosby, will be in the stands on Sunday at Lambeau Field. You wrote a story that's on our website. I encourage all the fans to go check that out. It's about a very courageous battle with cancer that Mason Crosby's sister-in-law has been fighting now for a little while, and Mason Crosby's younger brother, Reese Crosby, is her husband. Tell us a little bit about it. I know we could probably devote a whole show to this story because it really is pretty powerful. But for this segment here, let's give the fans some details.
Yeah. So basically, this goes back to January in the Packers NFC divisional playoff game against the Dallas Cowboys. Mason makes 3 amazing kicks there in the final 2 minutes of the game. One of which, obviously, Jason Garrett had used a timeout to try to ice him with 3 seconds to go.
Right.
He comes back, makes the next one. One thing a lot of people don't realize about that performance is everybody was looking at him, and there was more than 4 minutes. I went back and looked at the game tape. It's more than 4 minutes that passes between when Jared Cook makes that catch and when Mason Crosby finally hits the game winner. And in that time, cameras are on Mason Crosby constantly. Nobody really realizes, including myself and the media, he's wearing a teal band on his right arm, and that was for his sister-in-law, Brittany, who a month earlier was diagnosed with ovarian cancer at 27 years old. If you know anything about ovarian cancer, it's incredibly, incredibly rare for a lady as young as herself to get diagnosed with that.
Yeah.
And the story kind of goes into all of their where they're at in the process and in the trials and tribulations of that terrible disease. They're coming back here for the first time since the Thanksgiving 2015 game when the Packers played the Bears. And just it kind of goes into everything in their life and how it's changed. And also from Mason's perspective, how it's motivated him and given him perspective in his efforts, not only on the field, but with the Vince Lombardi Cancer Foundation. That's been a big point of emphasis for him for over 10 years now, a passion project for him and his wife, Molly. And then it was after that that he had two grandmothers, both get breast cancer, one of which passed away from it about 5 years ago. And obviously now Brittany's battle with ovarian cancer, something very close to the Crosby's hearts.
Yeah, just an amazing story, this fight that that the family is having. And I also want to say, obviously it's a sad story, but Brittany wouldn't want me to say
no.
that because the last thing she wants, and you quote her in the story is saying it, she does not want this to be a pity party for her for all of the trials and tribulations and everything. And quite frankly, the shock of getting a diagnosis like yeah. that at the age of 27, that's not what this is about for her. She wants this to be about the life she's going to lead, this fight that she's going to put up for as long as it takes. And also, you know, talking to you and her husband Reese talking to you and Mason talking to you to raise awareness of,
yeah.
of something that you know that it's a disease that in one way or another touches us or connects us. There's almost nobody out there that doesn't either know somebody, have somebody in their family, a friend, whatever it is, who hasn't been affected by this. And so this story is definitely worth reading.
Yeah, and I definitely don't plead people normally to read my stories. You can or you can't.
I will. It's a good one, folks.
If nothing else, just to take away the message of ovarian cancer, something about Brittany, in addition to her being so young, there are very few signs of it at stage one and stage two. It's so important to listen to your body, because once it gets to stage three, you know, she even was quoted in the story saying when they finally got the scans and they finally got a chance to see what was going on, and she had seen over 12 doctors, no one could diagnose her with it. And it, as it turns out, there's just, as she put it, a bazillion dust-sized tumors that were all over her abdomen when
wow.
they finally were able to get into it. And at that stage, obviously required 24 weeks of chemotherapy. It's been a rough road for them trying to get through this. But her biggest message is that for women out there, regardless of your age, ovarian cancer tests, they are not a part of your yearly examinations. It's something that if you can go online, you can see all the symptoms, but you really have to listen to your body. And for her and Reese, they've been together for 5 years. They've known each other since second grade homeroom. It's something that's really brought them closer, and for Mason, really tied everything together and being able to see her fight and obviously how that's motivating him now in his own efforts.
Yeah, and the family had a nice reunion. They're all from Texas. The family had a nice reunion at the Packers-Cowboys game
yeah.
earlier this season which was another dramatic win for Green Bay.
Yeah, and she wasn't able to be at the NFC Divisional playoff game because of her treatments and everything. She was 9 days out of the hospital. So for her to be able to go to that game, be able to walk up all the stairs at Jerry World was also a little bit of a victory in itself.
Yeah, definitely. Well, before we go to our break, Wes, a little bit of sponsor business here. Picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Sub's Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 11 by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/bestseats. Cousin Sub's, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford next to Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, final segment of the week. As usual, let's take a quick glance at some other games going on around the NFC in particular. Minnesota Vikings playing at home, but they've got a tough one against the Los Angeles Rams. Two teams that are 7-2, looking pretty good in the NFC picture at this moment. But obviously the Packers hoping if the Rams can pull off the road victory there, then the Packers potentially could pull within one game of the division lead by beating the Ravens. And then also in the NFC North, the Detroit Lions are in Chicago. The Lions tied with the Packers at 5-4. The Bears now 3-6. If the Bears lose another one and get their seventh loss, it sort of becomes they're officially playing out the string, I think. So Chicago yeah. really playing with its season on the line.
Yeah, absolutely, and trying to defend home court against divisional opponents. I mean, that's really, I think, the biggest thing that you have to do when you're looking at an NFL season, when you're picking out, you know, your must-win matchups. Also, I got to mention, this situation that's unfolded with the NFC, the Rams, Vikings, and Saints, all 7-2 at this point in time, all playing each other because of that connection between them all being third place teams last year.
Isn't that amazing? It's
incredible.
That works? Yeah.
So for those squads, I mean, you have to make an argument. They have some of the toughest schedules of the season. And then the Rams playing the Vikings this week. They have the Saints coming up in a couple weeks. We're really going to find out what LA is made of and exactly what kind of contender they're going to be in this race. Because as strange as it sounds, for as dominant as Seattle's been in that division for so many years, Arizona had their run, San Francisco had their run, the Rams have sort of been the pushover there in the West, and now suddenly they're a legitimate contender.
Yeah, I think that game in Minneapolis is going to be really interesting. The Minnesota Vikings with that defense, the Rams are scoring points on everybody. Minnesota did give up 30 against the Washington Redskins last week, so if there's any chink in that armor of the Minnesota Vikings defense, Sean McVay and Jared Goff are probably going to find it. But other big games in the NFC, boy, you got Washington at New Orleans. Mm-hmm. You have Philadelphia at Dallas in the Sunday night game, and then Monday night you've got Atlanta at Seattle. A lot of NFC contenders going head to head here. Some really interesting matchups and potentially interesting results.
Yeah, it's interesting, Mike, because I don't want to sit here and say, well, this is the most important week of the season, but there really are some season defining games that are going to be played in this, because not only is it about, you know, staying as a front runner within the conference, but there could be playoff implications with this, tiebreakers, all that fun stuff. From the Packers' perspective, I would think you're probably cheering for the Rams in this. You're probably cheering to some extent for the Bears, I would say, with having the two wins over them this season. And certainly Washington is becoming their best friend with all these matchups that they've been having. So will be very interesting to watch, and I'll be an interested party to check out that Monday night game between Atlanta and the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, a lot of movers and shakers, I guess you might say, with the way the NFC is shaping up. But with that, we will call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.